Okay, so I'm going to say a few things to introduce the evening. So yeah, tonight, as I said earlier, we've got three talks from Vicky, Rebecca and Dave, which are, well, the main event. I'm just the warm-up act. And yeah, so tonight we're exploring the transformational practice of going on retreat. So retreat is, in my view, one of the most important things we can do if we can get away on retreat. It's one of the most important things we can do if we want to go deeper. So if we want to go deeper in our meditation, in our exploration of the Dharma, in our understanding of the Dharma in our own experience, in our awareness of ourselves and our own habits, and the transformation of ourselves, and in the ability to have deep friendships with one another. I think going on retreat, going away to... So when we go on retreat, we're often going away into the countryside, spending a weekend or a week or 3 months or 3 years in one place with a group of people, often. Some people, you can also go on retreat on your own, called solitary retreats. But more typically, we go away on led retreats. So we go away as a Sangha, as a community from Birmingham together. Or we might go to one of our Tree Ratna retreat centres on retreat. There's plenty of options for going on retreat. And going on retreat, yeah, as I say, I think is a really, really key practice if we want to go deeper with ourselves and with each other. And I think for me, like I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for going on retreat. So I think my first retreat literally changed my life. Yeah, it literally changed my life. It literally made me look at myself and what I needed to change and how I wanted to be. It gave me a vision for how I wanted to be. And that was, yeah, just very, very important. Yeah. So going on retreat can really change your life. So this year at the Birmingham Buddhist Centre, we've got this whole initiative, which some of you will have heard me bang on about a bit already. I'm going to keep going all year, I'm afraid. About being and building a vibrant Sangha heart at the Buddhist Centre. And this is, in a way, this is our vision and our mission for the year. And the invitation for you all as people who come here to the centre, whether you come once a week, twice a week, once a month, once a year, you're all invited to be part of that vision of being this heart and helping us to build our heart here at the centre. And so as part of that vision this year, we're doing something new as a community. We're taking the brave and ambitious step of going away together on a week-long retreat. And so usually Sangha retreats at the centre are weekends, and if you want to go on a longer retreat, generally you go to a retreat centre, one of our retreat centres in the movement, so Tara Loka typically for the women and Padma Loka typically for the men. But this year, we, as a Sangha, we're going to go on a week-long retreat together, and that's because the practice of retreat is important, and because we as a community are really trying to make something happen together. So I hope this evening will inspire you, will warm you up to thinking, yes, I could go on that retreat. And even if it doesn't warm you up to going on that retreat, hopefully it will warm you up to thinking about going on a retreat, yeah, this year. So we're going to have these three talks, as I say, from Vicky's going to go first, then Rebecca, then Dave. So I'll just say a few words about all of them and then they'll come up one at a time. So Vicky, top fact, joined the centre team here at the Buddhist Centre in December last year. So she is the youngest and freshest face on the team at the Buddhist Centre. And what does she do here, I wonder? Well, she does the maintenance. Yeah. So she's responsible for the upkeep not only of this building, which you'll all know, but we also own four other residential properties in Moseley. So she's got quite a job on her hands. And that, in a way, is a mark of the woman that Vicky is. Yeah, she's courageous. She says yes to things. She's not afraid of a challenge. But she's also very fun. I would say, she's very interested in you, and she's also very interesting. So she's interested and interesting. Yeah. So that Vicky's going to go first. Then we will have Dave. Top fact about Dave is that in a few 6 weeks' time, Dave will be up here again, but for another reason. And that's because we'll be sending him off to Spain on a four-month retreat where he will join the Tree Ratna Buddhist Order and get one of these things and a new name. So that's our top fact about Dave. And Dave is also very well known around the Buddhist Centre for maintenance. So he volunteers here 2 days most weeks. And what I love about Dave is he's very, very upright. That was the word that came to mind when I thought of him. He's very straightforward, and he's very steady, and he just says things how they are. So looking forward to hearing him in that sense. And then we'll have Rebecca. So Rebecca, top fact about Rebecca, I think you might not know, is that she first met the Tree Ratna Buddhist community in 2003 in a small group in the town of Letchworth. That's a bit random, isn't it? So she's got a lot of years of practice under her belt, and she moved to Birmingham in 2015. And when I think of Rebecca, I think of a very passionate and warm and intelligent and caring woman. So she's very typically to be found chatting to people, making them feel at home, and just really trying to be helpful and warm and friendly. So yes, and they've all been on a lot of retreats, so they've all got a lot to say, I'm sure, about the transformational practice of going on retreat. So let's welcome Vicky.
Cool. Thank you for rejoicing in me so beautifully, Singamati. It feels really good to be seen, and now I have a lot to live up to, so that's good. And thank you to you and the team for giving me this opportunity to give the talk. It feels really moving to be given the opportunity to share my experience with so many of you, some of you friends and some of you complete strangers, actually, which is a bit scary. So going on retreat. So when I was thinking about going on retreat and why I keep going on retreat and what my experience of that is, there were quite a few different things going on. And my experience and relationship with retreats has really changed over the last few years. So when I think back to the first retreat I went on, I think I've been coming for around like 6 months, 9 months, something like that. And at the time I was feeling really inspired by all the things I was hearing here, and I was wanting to engage more, but I wasn't really clear about how to do that or what that meant, and I was finding it a bit difficult to take myself seriously in that context. And someone said to me, "Oh, this is a retreat happening, you know, like why don't you come along?" And if I'm completely honest, I didn't really have any idea like what a retreat really was. Someone just suggested it'd be a good idea. It would be a nice place in the countryside. It was at Astana, where the big Birmingham retreat is going to be this year. And I should come, and there'd be some meditation and some tea. So I was like, well, I'm kind of up for that. So I kind of signed up. And I was really grateful I did, because in a way, when that person suggested that I come on the retreat, they were really offering me the opportunity to sort of take myself seriously. I really felt that they had seen my own spiritual potential, and there was a real invitation there to take that a little bit deeper and take that forward for myself. So that first retreat was good and a bit challenging as well. On the first night I got there, and we did all the usual things. So for those of you that haven't been, you normally arrive and you have dinner, and then there's normally some kind of evening talk or activity, or depending on the length of the retreat, you might just have some sort of a meditation and dedication ritual. So we did the meditation, and then we sat down, and then the person that was leading the retreat said, And after this session, we're all going to go into silence overnight. And nobody had told me that silence was something that happened on retreats. So at this point, I started freaking out a little bit and was like, oh no, like I didn't know this is what I'd signed up for. So initially I was a bit freaked out on this first night on this retreat. And of course you're given the opportunity to talk to people if you need to. It's not sort of a blanket rule, you know, you're not thrown out if you need to go and talk to someone. But I was a bit freaked out by this. And I did talk to somebody about it. And actually that conversation was really important for me. So in giving myself a space to be in silence, I got a bit more in touch with this sort of experience that I'd actually been having in meditation, where I was really uncomfortable about being in contact with my own thoughts. And through the process of getting a bit more in touch with that in silence, which was less intense than it was in meditation, I could then transform my relationship with meditation. So those early experiences of silence on retreat were very important for me in sort of transforming my relationship with my formal sitting meditation. And from that first retreat, retreats became a really big cornerstone in my practice. So I started working here in December last year, but before that my life was quite different, and I haven't always had the ideal conditions to sort of practice in the way that I'd like. So I've worked in jobs where I've worked very, very long hours. I've worked away from home a lot. I've had a lot of home responsibilities. I've been traveling a lot, and my health hasn't always been great. So those things can get in the way of sort of a regular meditation practice. They can get in the way of just having enough energy to come to the center. So I was kind of really, sometimes I was really struggling to like maintain momentum, like maintain the vision as such and kind of keep myself going. I could get here, but sometimes I'd be really exhausted when I arrived. And going on retreat kind of helped me stay in touch with something. And at first it wasn't very clear what that was. It was just sort of like this feeling I had. And every time I went on retreat, I sort of reconnected with that a little bit more deeply in a way that I could sort of contact here on one level, but going on retreat, I was able to get into a much clearer relationship with it. And over time, going on retreat became a really, really fundamental part of my practice for me. So in terms of connecting with that, in terms of sort of that experience, over time, it's become quite clear to me that what I'm connecting with often is my own desire to place the three jewels at the center of my life, my own desire to move towards becoming something that is outside, at the moment, my own limited understanding of what I can be. So there is something there about seeing more clearly the potential for all human beings and my own potential, and being able to contact a way of transforming that. And on retreat, that becomes much more real, and I can sort of move into a space where my relationship with that potential is a little bit clearer and it's not so far away. So to give you a bit of an example of that, I was thinking about some of the conversations I have on retreat. So there are all the normal ones like, hi, how are you? And particularly if you're with people you don't know, where are you from? What do you do for a living? You know, how many kids do you have? Like all of that kind of stuff. But after a few days of sort of meditating regularly with people, eating meals with people, tuning into the values that you're all sort of wanting to move towards, and being more open to other human beings, something greater arises between you. So it's something greater than the individual aspects of your communication. So it's not, when you're communicating with somebody, it's not just about what you say to somebody, it's not just about your tone of voice, it's not about your hand gestures or the way you look at each other. There is something more subtle in the way that you begin to communicate with people. And seeing the possibility for human communication on retreats, and seeing that on kind of deeper and deeper levels, the more I do it and the more frequently I go, the more inspired I am to move towards doing that in my everyday life. And that sort of practice has transferred outside of going on retreat. So those of you that know me might disagree, maybe not, I hope not. But I really feel like over the last few years, my ability to communicate and connect with people has been substantially transformed by the experiences I've had on retreat of connecting with people in that context. The other thing is that in that context, I have developed some really important friendships. So some of my closest friends I sort of developed a bond with whilst being on retreat. I've been able to share myself and share experiences with people in a way that can be quite challenging in other spaces. So in that sense, going on retreat has been has given me foundations in my sort of more mundane life to continue practicing by creating those friendships and creating the conditions in my home life to move forward and do that. The other aspect of going on retreat that has been really important for me is I often had this experience, and some of you might be able to relate to this, of having lots of different selves. So I had the self that came to the Buddha Center on a Monday night that prepared her study and was really excited to be here, and I had the self that was, you know, the kind of the person I was at home with my partner, and then I kind of had the self that was at work, and you know, she was very different to the others, and then I kind of had the self that, you know, liked to do volunteering things and all these different bits of me. And I really liked the person I was at the Buddha Center, and then the other bits kind of, they didn't really feel like they fitted so much. And I was sort of trying to integrate them all, but they really felt far away, and sometimes it felt quite clunky and like I was trying to sort of force something. And one of the really helpful things about being on retreat is, yes, you do lots of things like you meditate and you have discussion groups and, you know, you do devotional practices together, but you also do lots of really mundane things. So you chop vegetables and you cook dinner and you wash up and sometimes you might clean toilets. And if you go on a working retreat, you might build a wall or dig gardens. And I can honestly say some of the most important pivotal conversations of my life have happened in the washroom at Tara Loka Retreat Center. So there was something there for me about exploring those different sides of myself in that context and seeing that actually they weren't completely separate. And if I wanted to bring them all in, they weren't as separate as I thought, and that was actually very possible. And that really inspired me to work with that in a different way and sort of think about it in a more creative way. So one of the things I started doing was I went on this particular retreat at Tara Loka and felt really inspired by some of the opportunities I'd had to engage with generosity on the retreat. So volunteering to do things like collect firewood and cook dinner for other people and so on. And when I came back, my life at the time was, I was doing some research, so my time was very flexible. And I was really inspired to volunteer, so I started volunteering here for a few hours a week on reception. And that really transformed my relationship with some of the people at the centre. And it sort of enabled me to take myself a bit more seriously, enabled me to take what I had to give a little bit more seriously too. And the more I went on retreat, the more I was able to bring some of those qualities and some of those experiences that I was having on retreat into other parts of my life and bring other parts of my life onto retreat too. So for those of you that have been on quite a few retreats, like, do keep going. Take yourself on longer retreats, take yourself on more intense retreats. Do the retreats that you probably wouldn't do or the ones that you're a bit afraid of doing. And for those of you that haven't been, just go for a weekend, go for a week, talk to people about it, go for it. You know, if you're a bit afraid, like, talk to somebody about it, but just go and see what it's like and try it out for yourself. Thank you for having me.
Hi, everyone. Thanks to Matty for asking me to give this short talk about the inspiration and other benefits of going on retreat. But unfortunately, I may be the wrong person to have asked. You see, I've just returned from Padma Loka, our men's retreat centre, and I've had a truly dreadful experience. As you mentioned, I was one of a group of men who are going off to Cookie Loka in the street, the ordained. Now, normally on retreats at Padma Loka, everyone eats together in the main dining room. But on this retreat, our group was segregated in some respects, taking our meals in the community lounge. Now, anyone who knows me well knows that I like porridge. I'm ashamed to say that porridge is quite near the centre of my personal mandala. Now, for those of you not familiar with the term personal manga, a personal manga is like a sort of overview of life. And it shows you where you put the priorities and where you put your emotional energy. And I'm afraid that although I feel that the Dharma should be at the centre of my personal mandala, I'm afraid porridge is in there, elbowing its way in a little bit. Now, in the main dining room of Padmaloka, the porridge is served in a great steaming vat. It's carried by two men and it has a guardrail around the edge to stop people falling in. And has a ladder reaching down to the bottom, so occasionally men can go down with shovels and clean it out. There is truly an abundance of porridge in that vat. And when the queue in front of me dwindles, and it's my turn, I ladle out a big dollop, and then I dip in for a second one, which takes ages to free itself from the spoon because it's really thick. But I hang in there shamelessly, waiting for the porridge to slowly fall with a thud into my bowl, trying the patience of others behind me in the queue. But this one is different. When the porridge was carried into the community lounge, where the prospective audience were eating, I could see that it was in very small vats. And peering into it, I could also see that a catastrophic miscalculation had taken place. There was simply not enough porridge in that pan to feed 19 people. I filled the ladle, and every fibre of my being was screaming at me, "Take more, take more." But I didn't, and I walked to the dining table with a cheesy look of Satanness on my face that implied, yes, I usually take a modest portion of porridge every morning for my repast, an amount about the size of a baby's fist. Meanwhile, my internal toddler was screaming and beating its head on the floor. So what's all this got to do with inspiration and the benefits of going on retreat? Well, I haven't got time here to talk about all of the benefits. Benefits like being in a beautiful natural environment amongst people who share the same ideals, or the opportunity to live a pure Dharma life for a while and build up spiritual momentum. And of course, among those things are having the time to make real and meaningful connection with people without the intervention of mobile phones or children interrupting, and sort of rising above the use of social chit-chat. And the opportunity to enjoy silence in a frantic world, which is conducive to deeper reflection, and more regular periods of sustained meditation. So I'm not going to go into those in any depth, but I would just like to single out one benefit, which for me has been very important, and that I've managed in small measure to carry on developing outside a retreat environment: emotional resilience. Now, I have to admit, when not on retreat, I live in a sort of bubble. And in that bubble, things are largely as I like them to be. At home, in the flat, the porridge is always of the right consistency and of the right amount. And it's not too hot and it's not too cold. The coffee's always of the right type and strength. Everything is fixed and certain, or as certain as I can make it. On retreat, and even if your experience of retreats has only been of a short weekend one, you'll know this. On retreat, you realise that nothing's fixed. And things are largely out of your control. The porridge is too thick or too thin. That's not the brand of coffee you usually have. And the person next to you at the breakfast table is eating toast, and it sounds like someone chopping firewood. And you're not in a hotel, and you can't ask the management to bring you some real Marmite instead of this cheaper version, or move you to another table, away from noisy eaters, or people who cook tahini in porridge. So, hopefully you put up with things as they are, relying on the Dharma to get you through. And you may use a variety of tactics to see you through, sending metta to the noisy eater, remembering in the herd, only the herd. And with regard to the yeast extract question, reflecting with gratitude that far from having fake Marmite, some people in the world have no Marmite or any other kind of food. Another benefit of putting up with things as they are, simply being with that, oh no, someone's eaten all the bran flakes feeling, is that in experiencing that feeling fully without reacting and trying to fix it by complaining, for instance, you'll also notice the passing of that feeling and hopefully start to make a connection with impermanence, a central pillar of Buddhism. Now, does all this sound like hard work? You could be having a Warner break somewhere at the seaside, where there'll be real Marmite if you want it, and your wish is their command. Why bother with all this retreat business? Well, I don't think most people see a Warner break as an opportunity for growth and development. Nor do Warner advertise their breaks in that way. And I'm not singling out Warners here, other breaks are available. My experience of retreats has been that if you do rely on the drama to get you through, and for me it's been touch and go on some retreats, the increased emotional resilience that you'll gain will start to show itself in your everyday life. When the old lady in front of you in the supermarket queue is fumbling in her purse and everybody behind you is getting really impatient, you'll take your attention to your breath. When someone rings you in the middle of Strictly and tells you that you had an accident 3 years ago and that you're in line for squillions of pounds, you'll say, no thank you, be polite with them and gently put the receiver down. And the first time that you do things in this very different way, you'll say, wow, and you want more of the same. And you'll make a connection between that and this Dharma business that you've been doing, and you want more of the same. Because personal change like that is like putting down a heavy burden. And you'll ask yourself, how could all this have come about from that sometimes uncomfortable weekend at that retreat centre when they didn't have the right Marmite and the dorm was cold and someone snored? And you'll be full of wonder. And hopefully you continue to go on retreat as often as you can and continue to make the connection between what happens there and in other aspects of your Dharma life and the emotional resilience you seem to be developing. And you'll start to have an unshakable confidence in the Dharma. And you'll start to become less shakable yourself, not blown about so much by that. And your initial sense of wonder will grow. That's been my experience. You know, people have been going on retreat for thousands of years, willingly taking themselves away from their normal lives and preferences. And most don't do this because they're masochists who relish painful experiences and get pleasure out of it. They do it because they realise that growth and development come from stretching ourselves, from occasionally and willingly putting ourselves in uncomfortable circumstances outside our comfort zones. In trying to gain insight into the true nature of reality, it's good to put yourself into situations of uncertainty, places where that insight can arise. And when you get the barest inkling of that insight, you realise that discomfort is a very small price to pay for something so precious. For those of you who haven't been on retreat before, I'm conscious that you may be going away with the idea that retreats are like spiritual boot camps, full of hardships and deprivation. Well, relax. There'll probably be real Marmite. And in my experience, the bran flakes don't run out. And hey, if someone drops tahini in their porridge, well, work with it.
By the way, Dave, if you haven't tried the reduced salt Marmite, well, fake Marmite from Sainsbury's, I do recommend it. It's quite tasty.
So I don't actually know what I'm talking about, so I brought a safety net with me. As in, like, I know what I could talk about, but I haven't decided yet, so I'm just going to take you all in and see where it takes me. So my first retreat was at Tara Loka in 2003, and I had a bit of a challenging experience, but I have kept going on retreat, and actually, it's not full of hardship and deprivation for me. There are challenges, which I will talk a little bit about, but actually what I thought of, what are the three words that would come to my mind when I think about going on retreat? And they were connection, inspiration, and beauty. Actually, those were the three words that I managed to narrow it down to. So if you don't remember anything else that I say, inspiration, connection, and beauty are basically could summarise what I want to say in this next 10 minutes, probably quite
succinctly. So I have quite a busy job, and I was I'd come to the end of the first term. I work in the university, and I had piles of marking. Well, actually, we don't have piles of marking anymore because it's electronic, but I had a big folder full of marking. And in fact, I was texting my friend Prasanna Matthew there, saying, I don't know whether to go on retreat. And I was probably really annoying her, saying, I'm going on this retreat. I don't know whether to go. And I wanted her to basically tell me whether I should go on retreat or not, because I just couldn't decide whether or not it was more important to get my marking done and not mark on Christmas Day, or whether to go on retreat. And eventually, my friend Pippa encouraged me, because I said, I'm looking for you to encourage me to go on retreat. And so she did, and so I went. And so I got, it was only kind of when I was actually on the M5 to Adishtana that I knew that I'd actually made the decision. And just think, well, I go on retreat and I know I benefit from it, but sometimes I can get so sucked into the world that I forget. So actually I'm really grateful to be here, to hear from other people about what it is that keeps me going on retreat, and also to have the opportunity to reflect on that. So that's been a real boon. So thank you for that. So I got to Adishtana and I got out of my car, and basically my hair was pretty much on end. It wasn't, you know, kind of sleek and smooth like it was. It was basically like this big frizz ball, and I was like of stress. And I got there and, you know, I'd kind of been like, oh my God, I've got so much marking, just throwing everything in a suitcase. And I got out at Adishtana and I couldn't believe the transformation when I got out of the car. I could just see the courtyard, you know, sort of dimly lit. You know, the sky was almost like the kind of blue of these blankets that you're wearing, you know, because the sun was going down, it's December. And then I saw Roz, I saw Kay and Sue, I saw Roz sitting over there, she was walking down to her car, and it's like, oh, just without anything happening, there was just something that was like, immediately I was away from the world. It was just, I was just transported. You know, I was still me, I still had the marking, but suddenly it just didn't matter anymore. It put things in perspective. And I don't know if that would have happened if that had been the first retreat I'd ever gone on, but it happened on this one. And I knew I'd made the right decision no matter what happened, just to have that feeling of release. Like, I'm not defined by my work. And I think that a lot of people can feel like they're defined by their work, whether they work in a Buddhist centre or whatever. You know, sometimes it's just good to go away and just get in contact with yourself. Well, I find that, even though it can be painful at times, because sometimes work's a really good way of avoiding what I want to be facing, because I can feel like, oh, you know, I've got this job that I studied for a long time to get, and I can actually feel quite almost like this sort of fake confidence around it. You know, it gives me a bit of maybe status or identity. It's not a fantastic job, but it's one that I feel actually a bit proud of. So yeah, there was a kind of a beauty that I came into contact with. The lake, there's a big pond, or I call it a lake, but it's probably a big pond at Adishtana, and just that reflecting the sky, just that beauty was just really struck me, that beauty that I wasn't experiencing because I was actually too busy and too caught up in my everyday experience. So yeah, that was before I'd even walked in the door. But then I got into the reception area and I saw other people around. You know, I sort of started seeing people going in their rooms and doors open with suitcases on beds and people putting the duvets on their single beds. And it was like, oh, I'm going to be living with people. And there's that kind of mixed sense of like slight fear. Is anyone going to really annoy me this weekend and I'm not going to like them at the end of it? And also like this joy. And there were a lot of women from this sangha here as well that I didn't really know. And it's funny because when I come into the centre now, I kind of see a few of you that I've been on retreat with. And it's like there's this special little bond between us. It's like we've lived together, we've shared something, and there's these beautiful experiences that we've had. And this energy that arises on retreat. I spoke to a friend of mine and I was saying, oh, I'm going on retreat, like what happens? And we both said, energy, this energy arises. Because that bond, I think, I was reflecting on, what is this bond about? I think there's lots of reasons, but one of them is that the same reason that the energy, I think, arises on retreat is that we're all turning away from the world, as it were, and turning towards what we place most value on in our lives, what inspires us more than anything. And that, what does that mean? Well, so that means kind of we're all there, we meditate together, we live together, we get maybe a bit irritated with people doing things that maybe we don't want them to do, maybe someone bangs the door too loud, you know, and
Actually, this happened to me on a retreat last year. I was on a 10-day retreat, and there was a girl. So I'll tell you a story about this girl in the group. And I didn't really like her because she wasn't my sort of person. And frankly, that's a bit wrong because she wasn't doing what I wanted her to do. So we were quite often on retreat. If you haven't been on one, like you're going to get into groups and you talk about stuff. And there was this girl, great, I've got a prop. So she's sitting in this chair, like we're all sitting in chairs actually, but she's like this with her arms folded and really closed. And I found that terribly, terribly offensive because if I look at someone and they don't smile, it's a real threat to me. And anyway, so I kind of like was feeling like the energy was getting stuck and this person was obviously having a difficult time. And I'm there, like my own responses are coming up towards this person. And I have to say that my response at the time wasn't compassion. My response was like, you know, why are you being like this? Why can't you just open up and like let everybody see what's inside? I thought, well, so what she needs to do is just like trust us and be vulnerable. Jaya Bodhi last week was talking about vulnerability and trust on retreat. And this person, kind of other people were opening up and she seemed to be getting irritated or angry with the fact that people were doing that. Like if we digressed from a question that we were discussing, she was like kind of, you know, moving a little bit, like maybe changing her position or there would be a huff or a puff. And anyway, this kind of like got to me a bit and I tried, she was in the fourth stage of my metta-bhavana. And then day four came. Now day four, typically for me, and I think others on longer retreats, can tend to be like, basically like PMT, if you're a woman. Like you basically just sort of cry and feel a bit crappy and don't necessarily understand why. Something just seems to happen on a magical day four, so that's a warning if you go on a retreat that's longer than a weekend, just to watch out for that. Just think of it like PMT. So I'm sitting there and the thoughts in my head were something along the lines of like, oh, I haven't got anything of worth to say. I shouldn't be in this group. I shouldn't take up space because it's a big group. And if I say anything, then it'll stop other people. And all these thoughts and stories going around in my head. And the more I thought about it, the more I felt myself tensing up. And I was worried then, another layer, oh, I'm taking up energy in this group because other people, I'm not engaging with them because I'm thinking about myself. Oh no, there I am thinking about myself in this group. So I went off to the toilet and at tea break and I had a cry. And someone came over to me, sort of what I might normally say is my type of person. Now, by the way, I don't really believe this. This is just like one of the stories I have in my head. And she came over and she's like, oh, darling, can I give you a hug? And I was like, I really, really appreciate that you want to give me a hug, but actually I just can't receive it right now. And I was like, oh, I can't receive a hug. Maybe that's how that other person is feeling. And it was like, and I feel embarrassed always to tell this story that, like, I don't see myself as somebody who's completely ignorant and lacking empathy. But it was just like, but she'd seen this girl was like sitting across and she wasn't with everyone else making tea and coffee by the tea station. She was sitting in the room and she came over to me with this sketchbook and she opened this book and on the page was a painting that she'd done and it was a person, a woman, in armour. Just this person with armour, but there was a door. Just here, there was a door in the chest plate of the armour, and inside, and the door was open, so it's an open door, and inside it was a heart. And she didn't say anything. I was crying, and I couldn't receive somebody's affection because I felt really worthless. I just was in a bit of a funk for some reason. She just came over and was just like, "Can I show you something?" And just showed me that, just silently, and it was like, "Wow, that really was just." You know, I can't convey what that felt like. This kind of like reciprocal connection. Like she had obviously seen something in me, and that kindness like helped me to overcome my irritation of her. And actually, I was really grateful to her. And that, you know, you don't have those sort of significant, what I feel was a significant experience with everybody. But that's the sort of thing that can happen, you know, on a retreat when somebody does that. For me, it's usually, I will make a little judgment about someone, how someone's behaving, and then I kind of realise it's a bit like that story about the guy who's on the underground and his kids are like running around, and so I think, you know, kids, people should have their children under control, and so I'm going to be the person to go and tell him about it. So he says, "Excuse me, are you aware that your children are causing disruption on this train?" And the man says, "I'm so sorry, their mother's just died and I simply don't know what to do with them." And, you know, sometimes I think it's really, like, retreats are a place, a bit of a cremation ground, a crucible, where you kind of, you're stuck in with other people. And actually, it can be really challenging. But if you stick with that, then you remember that actually we're all suffering. You know, it's not just me suffering with my minor irritation. And that, for me, like being around other people, because you can't get away from them on retreat. We can. You can go for a walk, but you're living together, and you're kind of like in a cooperative. And that's what I really like about being on retreat, is that actually you're all there with that unifying energy. And I just wanted to briefly share a quote from Bhante Sangharakshita about cooperatives, because I felt like it was relevant to what I'm trying to say, which is, when you are working in a cooperative, you're working together. Cooperation means you put all your cards on the table. You pool all your energies and your ideas, your abilities and skills, and I've edited this slightly. Because you have a common objective, you all work together. In such a situation, you're very aware of other people. You make no attempt to impose yourself upon them. There's no question of power. A cooperative of any kind functions entirely in accordance with the love mode. And that isn't easy. In a genuine co-op situation, you abdicate the power mode absolutely, and only the love mode is allowed to operate. And if you're working in this way or relating to others in this way, there is a sort of abnegation of your individualism, your egoism. And I think this is what Dave was alluding to in his talk. You start to put your preferences aside. And if I had it double the time, I would like to talk about the other side of that, which is that I think, is that when we get ourselves out of the way, something that is more than beautiful, I would say sublime, something that makes the hairs stand up on the back of your neck and has made me cry just witnessing the kindness and the love and the friendship. Like these two women here, seeing them on retreat, I can even just, this kind of outpouring of love that you can see between them, the fondness and affection that you see between people on retreat when they're close together, and that you feel for people who are strangers in the beginning, and that bond when we let ourselves get out of the way of that is just immense and incredible. And that's why I never look at people in the same way after I've been on retreat with them. And I had no idea what I was going to say, and there it is. So thank you very much for listening.
Lovely. Thank you. Let's thank you again to Vicky, Dave and Rebecca. In a way, their stories spoke a million stories, didn't it? And for those of us that have been on retreat, I'm sure we were resonating with lots of different aspects of what they were talking about. And for those of us that haven't been on retreat, hopefully it's whetted your appetite or raised your level of curiosity about why on earth you might go on retreat.